Hi, Erin.
Good morning. How lovely to talk to you. I am with Amy Rhoda Brown, who is a strategy coach for artists.
Nailed it. That is correct.
I really don't know. But we need to tell the thousands and millions and zillions of listeners. Amy, I always forget to ask about clothes, which is because this is conversation about closets. I need to change the name. So let's start there. I believe in wearable art, and you have a beautiful tattoo on your shoulder.
That's true. It's picture the photograph in the background is a picture that I took myself in northern Saskatchewan, which is the sort of trees and lakes part of Canada. Well, one of the many trees and lakes parts of Canada. And my mother lived there. She always wanted to live in a little house in the forest, and she finally got to in her old age. And my kids and I would go and visit every summer. And I took this photograph from a boat, from a friend's boat. And the blue jay on top is from a photograph that I found on the internet that someone else had taken. And the reason I chose a blue jay was because my mother and I both fed the birds, like have backyard bird feeders. Blue jays are one of the birds that come both to my feeder in Toronto and to her feeder in Saskatchewan. So
What a
that's.
beautiful story. There's always stories around tattoos. And if you're worried about getting a tattoo because you think, oh, will you want it in 10 years? It's a beautiful representation of where you are in the moment, and where you are right now is incredible and deserves to be remembered.
Exactly. Yeah.
Your tattoo, however, tells a beautiful story of nature. I am going to ask a favor. I can't see the whole tattoo on your website. Would you add another photo there?
I don't know if I have a recent photo of it, but I can send you one from a couple of years ago. Yeah.
Of that, I'm due for a new tattoo myself. But there you go. We covered some kind of clothing because I do believe that comes under decorative art, and it definitely comes under an accessory. But before we just one more, what are your favorite clothing to wear? What's your favorite clothing to wear when you are creating?
Oh, interesting question. My favorite clothing to wear in general has got to be a good, just a pair of blue jeans, simple. And a cute top. Blue jeans and a cute top.
That
Which
is,
is
of course, it's a creative art. That's a great creative outfit, especially if you happen to spill paints or art or goodness knows what on your jeans.
Absolutely, yeah.
As a strategy coach for artists, and there's this little ampersand, not an ampersand, those little star things, and people who aren't quite ready to call themselves artists. So if you don't feel you can own the title right now, that's fine. But why do artists need strength?
Well, art is work. It doesn't just happen. It has to be given space. It has to be given time and discipline and all those things that we maybe think more have to do with going to the office or doing assignments in school. No, I think, art needs structure to thrive. And so I kind of work with people who have the creative side already. I'm not a creativity coach, but who know that their art could be so much better, could be so much more if only they could figure out how to be consistent about it, how to make space for it, how to shift their identity as well as their life to make room for art.
So you create the architecture so people can hang their paintings.
Exactly. Yeah, I love the architecture, the structure.
And creating space for art as literal and emotional and in terms of time, because you need somewhere to create, you need time to do it, and I'm guessing you need some kind of bandwidth.
Yes. Yeah, so absolutely. Rest, rest and boundaries come up a lot in my coaching. Yeah.
What about people who aren't quite ready to call themselves artists? Why aren't they ready?
Well, so many reasons. There's a sort of the gatekeeping, like, oh, if I'm not good enough, I can't be an artist. Or if I don't make money at it, I'm not really an artist. Or if I haven't trained for it, I'm not really an artist. Or there's that sort of fear of being pretentious, or that being an artist is not something that you're, you know, that your mom and dad would want you to be. So yeah, lots of things can get in the way.
I don't think many children have parents that say, go be an artist. That's a brilliant career. Keep up with that finger painting. No need to go to university. Just you keep on doing that.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, you do you, kid. Yeah.
You allude to imposter syndrome on your site. Is that a biggie?
Yeah, I think so again, because there's that feeling that somebody outside needs to give you a rubber stamp to be an artist, you know, like you have to be in a gallery or you have to sell your art or something like that. The people do sort of look for that.
You have a very strong why. Would you tell us about that?
My why is that I want you, everybody listening, to make art. I want you to say the thing that you have to say. I want you to create the beautiful thing that you want to create. I want to see what's inside you, because somebody out there needs it. Somebody needs to hear what you have to say.
As you say, the world needs everyone's voice, and the message that you, when you share your own message, you have no idea of how somebody has been waiting to hear that message, because they relate to you because they've never heard anybody like you speak before.
Exactly. Yeah.
I know justice and sustainability are important to you. How does that tie into art?
Well, justice is about, in this perspective, it's about everyone having a voice, you know, who gets to speak, who gets to be heard. It's also about what we talked about before, rest, who has time to rest and who has time to make art. You know, if you are working three jobs and riding the bus all day and looking after your kids, chances are whatever is inside you that needs to be heard is going to stay unspoken, because you're so busy just running your life. So yeah, that's justice is important to me from that sense. And I'm interested in, as well as helping individuals figure out how they can make room for art in their lives, I'm interested in how we can restructure the world so that everybody can do that. So it's not a privilege. And the environment is connected to justice as well. In the sense that climate change is going to affect people in different ways, and it's visited on certain parts of the world by the actions of the rest of the world. And also, I mean, so many things. Nature is important for everybody, for mental health and for creativity and just for like leisure and beauty. And that's another thing that's not evenly distributed in our society. So,
and art can be made using sustainable products, and art can also give a voice to sustainability.
Yes. Yeah.
How did you start off in math? I love the name, the University of Waterloo. Of course, I go straight to the ABBA song. How did you start off in math?
It wasn't a very well thought out decision because I was 17. That was the thing that I did well at in high school. I did very well in math in high school. Turns out my high school math was not very challenging, and that's why I did so well. But I went to Waterloo. Waterloo has one of the best math programs in the world. Of course I didn't do well there. But I stuck with it because I'm a bit stubborn. And because it seemed like a fairly straight line between getting a math degree and getting a job and getting to be a proper grown up and earn money and do proper grown up things. And that was really what I wanted at that point. Yeah, that's what I did. And I'm kind of a little bit proud to say I squeezed out of there with a math degree. It's not a very impressive math degree, but you know, it's still a math degree. So,
And blood, sweat, and tears, and work.
yes. Oh, so much sweat and tears.
Any consolation, I wrote plays in high school. I acted in high school. I wrote novels in high school. And at 18, I joined the customs department. So.
Right? Yeah. I mean, it doesn't matter. You have to do something. Just do your best.
Was a terrible customs officer. Luckily. Like a segue to an advertising agency before they fired me.
Oh my God, the stories, right? Oh, they just collect.
Part of your wonderful resume, there's software development. That's another kind of art. Can you tell me about your software development time?
I was not in that for very long. That was the sort of natural follow-on from the math degree, was to go work in software. And I kind of bashed my head against that for a few years. It is creative, but I didn't get the skills. Like, I never got sort of enough practice at it to have it be a beautiful creative process for me. It was just more blood, sweat, and tears, really. And at that time, there was not much support for junior developers in companies. So they kind of left me to sort of figure it out on my own, and I didn't. I ended up bailing after years. I said, no, this is not fun. I'm not enjoying myself. So.
Fun is so important. Humor is so important.
True.
I can see that's it comes through on every page on your website. You've got delightful copy. A friend of mine told me I had an engineer's brain because I understand process, and it sounds you have that too, in the fact that you can help create structure and systems. But I tend to think of my brain as more being an engineer on acid. So.
Yeah, I like that engineer's brain. I mean, I think I do have that kind of brain, and I think that's part of what I can sort of offer in coaching is like, I can help you figure out the structure, what you need, what works for you, what's missing, what you can try. So yeah, engineer's brain. I love that.
Did you enjoy the publishing world a little bit more?
I did, yeah. I was self-employed, and I really like to be self-employed. I don't like. So I got into copy, because I was looking for something I could do from home. Interstices of my life with two little kids, and copy editing is good for that. You can kind of figure it out and do it on your own time, and just send the thing back when you're finished with it. But in the process, I learned about the language. Go from having an actual facility with language, which I do because I'm a big reader, to being a copy editor, which is a very different thing from being a reader. It's not nitpicking, it's not being, grammar, it's so complicated and nuanced than that. So I had to learn so much about English and so much about language and so much about justice and so much about sort of how you say things and how you talk about things. So that was really incredible. And the community of Toronto was really good, and in Canada is really good. That was super fun. And I also dabbled a little bit in self-publishing, which was great because that's very creative. And again, it really, really deepened my appreciation for book design. I had never thought about book design. To me, a book was a thing that arrived fully formed in front of me, and it was just the way it was. But after having designed a book, I realized you have to decide. Every single thing is a decision. What goes on the cover? What goes on the footers and the headers of each page? You know, what do you do after pages? Every single thing represents a decision. Now, I pick up a book and, God, I respect it. I respect the font choices and what they put in the front matter and the back matter and what's on the back cover, and there's just so much to it. And I learned the lesson of, if you ever try to make something for yourself, you will appreciate that thing in life for the rest of your life.
When you see the steps that go into it, it gives you a whole nother understanding. And cover art, I never thought of it, but of course within the book there's art and choices as well. And cover art can make the difference, such a difference in whether people pick up your book, whether people are drawn to your book.
Yeah, absolutely.
May I ask, what were the books about?
I worked on two or three books about software architecture. Which it was, interesting in its own way. And I worked on a self-published book about schizophrenia, which was really interesting. That was a fun cover to design. And I feel like there must have been another one, but I don't remember what it was.
Would you tell me more about the book on schizophrenia? What inspired you and how did that come about?
Well, I was, these are not books that I wrote. These are books that I worked on for other people. So this was a gentleman who had been trying to get this book published through university. He wanted to publish it because he said it was too, it was too hot, too controversial. And he was putting forward theory about schizophrenia, that it's actually it's not that it's not pathological, but that it's sort of a normal part of the human condition. And he had these arguments about group evolution and about statistical arguments about the how often it occurs and how it's genetic and stuff. I can't comment on the veracity of his arguments, and I'm almost afraid to look this book up. I don't know if he's gotten in big trouble or if it just disappeared without a trace, or if it's a similar argument to the argument that's advanced about ADHD, and that other conditions that they're not so much pathology as they are just sort of the end of a normal continuum of human behavior or the human experience. So that was that. I copy edited that book and I designed it. I designed the book and I kind of arranged for it to be printed. So, but all the whole time I was going, I wonder if he's right. I wonder, this is really interesting, but that was out of my pay scale to decide if it was true or not.
What a fascinating subject. But yet again, as a coach, you offered, back even though you were designing the book, you were still a coach because you were offering strategy, you were offering a process, you were offering structure. Because writing a book is blood, sweat and tears. I forget the author who said, I write when I'm inspired, and luckily I get inspired between 9 o'clock and 3 o'clock every day.
Yes. Yeah, exactly. Structure, discipline.
You alluded back to when you were at home with your children, and you discovered something called emotional decoupling. What's that?
I'm Bit of a not sure what the sorry?
con you're not sure what the context was?
Yeah, what's the context?
It is a bit of a it is a bit of a segue, isn't it? You signed up when you were experimenting, and artists love to experiment. And a workshop run by Toronto coach Sonia Grossi.
Oh, that's right. Oh, that was the name of that workshop. Yeah, so the workshop actually was not the that experience. I went to it. I can't remember why that appealed to me at the time. I think I was trying to change careers, trying to figure out what to do next. And the idea of not being so emotionally like seemed appealing, I think. So I went to this workshop. Also, it was inexpensive. And I was just looking for it because I was in a period when I was saying yes to everything and going to things and meeting people. And so I went to this workshop. And the thing that I learned about the workshop was not the thing about emotional decoupling. It was the thing about coaching. It was like, this is a job that you can do and get paid for. And it kind of brought together all of my psychology and in people and in, you know, personal development and growth, like all the stuff that I had been like, I had my fingers in it for years and years, just reading about it and learning about it and thinking about it. But I had never kind of cottoned on that that's a career in itself. And so I went to this workshop and I put my hand up and I contribute a lot of things that I had read. And it was like it was literally a life-changing experience. You know, I left there going, wow, that's really interesting. And within a month, I had signed up to learn how to be a coach.
The pivotal moments like that are great. I had an epiphany in a rainstorm in Maui about my next career move. And another way of putting it was to detach with love from various beliefs and things I had. And I realized that 23 years in peer facilitated self-development had given me so many skills that could be applied to my business and to coaching my clients. I love how all our life experiences add up to something.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, it all kind of makes sense. You can draw threads from everything to where you are now.
You on your website have this fascinating, there's a word for it, a statement or whatever.
But like a manifesto.
Yeah, that's it. Thank you. And I believe, what a beautiful way to put it. What do you believe? And that's a big subject, but let's get back to in terms of your wonderful coaching. What do you believe?
I believe that everybody, this is totally stolen from the International Coach Federation, but I believe it, that everybody is creative, resourceful, and whole. Creative in that we all create our own lives. Resourceful in that we have or have access to everything that we need to make life, to make our life the way we want it to be. And whole in that you don't need to fix yourself. It's not about becoming somebody different. It's about figuring out who you really are and amplifying that and using it.
I have a friend that tends to take quite a few classes, and I sat her down at one point and said, you don't need to learn anymore. You have all the information you need. This doesn't apply to everybody. One of my values is growth. But in her case, sitting down and actually getting in touch with how incredible she was, I think she needed that right then.
Yeah, and what a gift that you gave her when you told her that, little direct communication moment.
She wasn't thrilled about it at the time.
That often happens.
As part of your, you've had some impressive qualifications. For example, you went to the Adler Graduate Professional School. Would you tell me a little bit about that?
Yeah, it's little, I want to call it a boutique graduate school in Toronto. It's a private graduate school, which I didn't know existed in Canada, but here you are, where they teach coaching to the International Coach Federation standard. And they have a psychology master's degree. And they have, I think they have a psychology PhD program as well. So there, there's a coach school, and it is also a very academic kind of place. And it appealed to me partially because I like Adler. He's a psychology theorist. He was contemporary with Jung, Carl Jung. And I had been sort of following his teachings as a parent. So I was very chuffed to find a school named after him. And also because it's downtown, and I love an excuse to go downtown. And it turned out to be, and maybe, I don't know, subconsciously, maybe I recognize this, but it's a very highly regarded coaching school and coaching program. And it's also a great community because it's such a small program. You kind of, you know, you meet people and you get to know people in the community. So
having a community is so incredibly important.
Yeah.
Though, and I'm just going to give a slight shout out, Amy is also an International Coach Federation Associate Certified Coach. Try and say that really quickly. But back to community, one of the important things you believe when it comes to community is you don't think comparison is such a bad thing. I've always thought compare and despair, but you have another attitude to that.
Yeah, it can be dangerous waters to compare because I guess it comes down to your mindset. If you compare to someone else and you just think, well, they've got that je ne sais quoi and I don't, you know, that's it. That's not helpful. But I find comparison can be useful for a couple of reasons. Firstly, because it can give you some ideas about what you might want to do. So it's just like copying off the next kid in grade five. Like, you know, sometimes you see someone and they're doing really well and you can kind of take a leaf from their book, see what they're doing. What's their marketing like? What do they have that you haven't done yet? And then the other side of comparison is the much more emotional side, and that's like that gut stab of envy, which I find is a very useful thing sometimes. Like sometimes I'll see something or I'll see somebody and I'll get this feeling of like visceral envy and I'll think, what is that about? And that often is very helpful in terms of telling me what I'm missing in my life, and it's often something that I haven't consciously thought about. So it's like my body is screaming at me like, no, we have to do this thing. It's really important. You know, when I've been planning to do something else altogether. So you just got to pay attention.
Fantastic message. It's information. I very rarely get that, but I had that after talking to a podcast guest, and my first thought was, she's so far ahead of me. And then I thought, wait up. She's doing something that I have the ability to do. How fantastic that I can go out there and do it too. She validated and she inspired.
Yeah, exactly. It's just there. If you go past the emotion, you know, you don't have to stop at the emotion and get curious and think, you know, what else is happening here?
Here is some great advice from Amy. You'll get plenty. Do track her down. That's Amy Rhoda Brown, and that's R-H-O-D-A, rhodabrown.com. But here's Amy's mantra. How to be an artist. Create art. Keep making art.
That's all.
Now, here's seven things you don't need to be an artist. Can you remember what those were?
Oh, my goodness. You'll have to cheat because I don't remember.
Here's one that I fell into early on. I thought I needed a fashion degree, and I don't. I have been looking fabulous and making clothing choices since I was three. So you don't need an art degree.
Right. Yes, exactly.
You also don't need an audience. If you are wearing your most fantastic clothes, you can prance around the house in them. It doesn't need to go on Instagram.
Right. Do it for yourself.
Exactly. Just enjoy it. I was playing piano very badly this morning and having a fabulous time.
Good.
And with headphones on, no one can hear me. You don't need talent. I think talent is a misused word. We often look at people and think, oh, they're so talented. But really, they're slogging their guts out.
Yes. Oh, I completely agree. People will often say, oh, such a talented singer, such a talented dancer. Mm-mm. No, that's not going to get you very far. And in fact, I think talent, especially at the beginning of your career, can be a hindrance because you get kind of lazy. You think, like me with my math, right? I was so good at math. I was like, I'm awesome at this. I'm getting 97%. I'm just going to go get a degree in math. Well, sister, that only gets you so far. And I didn't have those skills. I didn't have the discipline. Same thing happens in art.
The only math I know is outfit formulas. This plus this plus this plus this.
Now, I bet that's not true. I bet you know things about proportion and volume and balance that are deeply mathematical that you've just let you.
There is a thing called the golden ratio, which is a mathematical system around helping you decide what clothing to wear. So, oh my goodness me, you're right. That is one piece of math I do know. It's a ratio that, anyway, contact me and I'll tell you about it.
Sign up for your mailing list.
Sign up for my mailing list. Become a podcast guest. That's what I want. Just be a podcast guest. I just want to talk to more women.
Yes.
Here's another one. You don't need skill. I tell my clients when they're like, I don't know how to put clothes together. It's like, it's a skill. You didn't come out speaking six different languages. There's skills that you learn. So what about you don't need skill to be an artist?
Yeah, that one is maybe one of the more controversial assertions, but I look at people who, my daughter told me that I'd get in big trouble if I said this, but Bob Dylan, for example, not a profoundly great singer, right? Like, you know, he does his best, I guess. But that's not the point, right? Like, he's not there to create a beautiful sound with his voice. That's someone else's job. So you don't necessarily need technical skill to create art that connects with people.
And if you are listening to a singer, for example, I was listening to Kylie yesterday, hallowed be her name. I want to be Kylie. This is Minogue, by the way.
Yeah, of course.
Her voice is not what you would call Adele quality, and yet, oh, but there is something to be said for production skills, and there's also something to be said for just being fabulous.
Yeah, the charisma, the power, the energy. Yeah, absolutely. Nobody is there going, well, you know, if she'd only produce from deeper in her diaphragm, she could, you know, no, you're dancing. No, too busy dancing.
I just want to dance to her. Yeah. And here's another one. You don't need a studio. Now, my clients do need wardrobes. They do need closets. I would suggest closets. Keeping your clothes on the floor and all over your bed and over furniture is not ideal. Though I did that when I first moved into this house. There were no closets. But in your case, you're saying artists don't need studios.
Well, that's a little scolding moment from me, because I think sometimes people use that as an excuse, right, to not figure out, you know, do something different. It can be a very safe space of, oh, you know, I would be a, you know, a Pulitzer Prize winning author if only I had the right, like, little shed in my backyard with heating and, you know, beautiful light. Well, maybe you would. but maybe that's not the missing element.
And J.K. Rowling apparently wrote at a coffee shop.
Right. I have the story in my head. Stephen King tells it in his book On Writing, of how he wrote all of like crouched over a folding table in the moldy laundry room of his trailer. And the man is like 6'7" or something. Can you, like, my body hurts just thinking about it. And yet somehow he wrote Carrie and then bought a better desk.
And I hope he has a chiropractor. Now, here's another thing. You don't necessarily need money and time, and that's so true. Quick, get some crayons. Find some printer paper or draw on the back of your kids' schoolwork.
Yes. I follow a man on Instagram who creates the most incredible art with a ballpoint pen.
Exactly. It's what do they say? It's not the tools, it's the carpenter or something. But again,
Yes.
you don't have to go to carpentry school. Oh, and here's another one that I love. Ageism. You know what? Grandma Moses started at 74. Iris Apple is a fashion icon and she's 99. You haven't wasted your youth. Just get out there.
Right? Yeah. Yeah.
Well, I'm glad you agree with me completely, but if you have anything more to say on that, by all means.
There, what more needs to be said? Yeah, again, yeah, is as an excuse? Maybe a little bit. There's sort of a fear, that I've set my path and kind of keep going. But now you can always do something new. Even redo your whole wardrobe, redo your whole look. Like, you don't have to settle for whatever you decided to wear when you were, 45. Just, switch it up. Surprise people. I saw a post on Instagram and it was like something like, when I'm old, I want people to say that I'm cute and adorable. I want them to say, what the hell is she gonna do next?
I'm writing that down. That must
Right? Aspirational.
be she going to do next? That may have to be my new tattoo. As it is, I've got several, so that basically I've donated my body to science. I figured I'd give them something to read.
Right.
I may have to put that might be my next tattoo. Here's what you do need to be an artist: a desire, a strong desire. And I suggest reconnecting with your desire every single day because we forget, we don't create, we consume, and we get distracted by the fact we've got a parking ticket. So remember, desire.
Yes. Yeah, and I love the reconnecting every day, because I am a person who does get kind of caught up in my routines and my to-do lists and sort of the nuts and bolts of things. And then, every 3 weeks or so, I'll pop my head up and go, what the hell am I doing here? Yeah, so maybe every day would be better than every few weeks.
It's I need a visual reminder, or I will forget. Vagueness is one of my state of beings. Hey, persistence is important. That's one I struggle with.
It is, yeah, because again, you've got to connect with your desire and you have to believe in yourself. I think sometimes if you try something for a little while and it doesn't seem to be going anywhere, you might tend to take that as a sign that maybe it's not the right thing. And I guess sometimes it is, but sometimes it's not. Sometimes things just take longer than you think, or maybe you're bored of this and you need to shake it up and try something a little different, but the same, But you do have to keep going, because otherwise it definitely won't work, whatever it is you're trying to do.
Make time for yourself. Put blocks in your calendar, for example, practicing new outfits or just putting pen on paper. Make it a priority. Block your calendar out first.
Yes. Yeah.
And ingenuity. Now, I'm from New Zealand. We are an ingenious country. We have to be. We're an island. We're small. We have something like 80 million sheep and about 5 million people. So we are outnumbered. We learned how to be ingenious. It's called the number eight wire mentality. You're saying all obstacles can be figured out.
Yes. Yeah, absolutely. And that's, if you're looking at that list of things that you don't need and you're going, but I don't have time and money, or you're going, but I don't have skills. Well, that's when the ingenuity comes in. What can you do instead? Where can you steal some time? How can you borrow or inherit some equipment? Where can you set up a little corner to do art if you don't have a studio, right? Like, all these things can be figured out if you have the desire and you want to persist.
Start off by tracking your money. There's no, I have a reason for this. Math, clarity creates art. Track your money, work out where your money's going, see if it's in alignment with your values, and then divert some of that so you can invest a coach, which will save you years and who can walk with you along the way. I'm a huge fan of coaching. It saves so much time and money when you actually get a little outside help. So that's one way to be ingenious. Speaking of which, track down Amy Rhoda Brown. There you go, whole name. I'm just going to run it all together. Jump onto her Work With Me page. And she has various different options. There's a huge shift, a big shift, which is 12 sessions, which is brilliant. And, you start off like I do. You do a 90-minute discovery session. I do exactly the same thing. Mine's called Discover Your Inner Closet. Yours is probably Discover Your Inner Artist. And then you also do Time for Change, which is brilliant. That's only 8 sessions. And if you are really feeling that you might not be an artist, you're feeling stretched for time, there's The Dilemma, which is 3 sessions. And who doesn't want to sort out a dilemma in only 3 sessions?
Right.
Exactly. So jump on the – is there another way you want people to get hold of you?
That's a great one. I'm also on Instagram at amyrhoda.coaches. And I'm on LinkedIn. I had to start using my middle name because, as you can imagine, Amy Brown gets you nowhere on the internet. So yeah, if you look for Amy Rhoda Brown, I will turn up one way or another.
I'm really grateful you put that middle name. Yes, when I was doing my due diligence, aka stalking, there was a lot of Amy Browns.
So many of us. Oh, we could make an army.
An army of artist coaches. This is so much fun.
Yes, I've had a great time. We didn't talk about clothes, Erin.
Yeah, we did. At the very beginning, we talked about how you would much rather be in jeans and a cute top, which we love. We also talked about how the fact that tattoos are a different kind of wearable art.
That's true. I want to say one more thing about that. So what I was saying about book design and book production, it's the same thing for clothes. I made one garment in my entire life. For some reason, I decided I was going to make a skirt or a dress or something. It was an incredible experience, and it took me to a new level of appreciation for garment construction and fit and fabrics. So yeah, I do highly recommend it. Try to make something, because, you know, even if you never make anything again, it will make you appreciate everything you wear so much more.
The only thing I tried to make was Barbie clothes, but and costumes when I was in Tokyo, which went terribly wrong. Do not get a glue gun next to somebody's skin.
Oh, true.
But also math, know your measurements. Fit is 90% of the way there to style.
Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. I knew somebody who, this is an incredible job. She would take like designers' designs, like their sketches, and make the patterns. And like blew my mind. Can you imagine the math? The math? I was in awe.
That is an incredible skill. She might want to take up sculpting as well, among other things.
Right? Yeah.
Thank you for your time today. This was, I love to laugh. I love art. I love clothes. So this was a trifecta. Is that what you call, which is also a triangle, which is back to geometry, which is back to math.
Oh, back to math.
Have a lovely rest of your day, Amy. Bye.
It has been fantastic. Bye.